Hello again, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Mumbrella's one-on-one podcast series. I'm your host and the editor of Mumbrella, Neil Griffiths. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Before we get started, as always, if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast wherever you're listening to this episode from, and be sure to check out the weekly Mumbrella Cast episodes, which are released every Wednesday. If you've been following the one-on-one series, welcome back. If you're new, welcome to the show. A big shout out to Mumbrella journalist Lauren McNamara, who hosted last week's episode. She was joined by NRL legend and the founder of the Goanna Academy, Greg Inglis. You can check that episode out right now, as well as past interviews with the likes of Greg Hoffman, Adam Ferrier, and Fender CMO Evan Jones. This week, however, I am joined by the CEO of ARIA, Annabelle Hurd. So just some quick context before we get into the show. This episode was actually recorded probably a week before the big announcement came out that Splendor in the Grass Festival had been cancelled, as well as another festival early this week, NYE in the Park. But we did talk about the state of the festival scene, as well as live music in Australia, artists in Australia, how do we better support Australian artists? And we also spoke about Annabelle's career. Some may not know, Annabelle was actually the chief operating officer at Network 10 for almost 3 years. She spent over 15 years at Network 10, and then she made the move to ARIA in February of 2021 during COVID pandemic, during a very turbulent time in the Australian music industry. It's a fascinating chat with Annabelle Hurd. I'm so excited to share it with you right now. Without further ado, here is Annabelle Hurd on the one-on-one podcast series. Annabelle, thank you so much for taking the time.
Oh my God, it's very cool to be here.
Where are you reporting to us from as we record this?
I am on Gadigal lands in Sydney at the ARIA offices.
Very exciting. Well, we kind of met all of 90 seconds ago. It's very good to meet you. I worked in music media for 10 years, and the company I worked for and eventually left from, you had only started at ARIA probably, I think, January of that year, and I left in May. So I haven't been able to really be in the ins and outs of everything you've been doing with ARIA, but I've seen everything happening from the outside, and it's been so great, and I just thought it'd be a good idea to have you on the show and hear about what's been happening.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, it's been 3 years now, which is insane. I think the first 12 months was really COVID heavy, so in a way that's just like I don't count that. Although we did achieve quite a lot even in that 12 months. Mm. It's been a wild ride. Super fun. Quite wild.
as we always do on this podcast, before we really get into the thick of it, why don't you give us a little This Is Your Life moment and tell us a bit about your career and story leading up to ARIA.
Sure. So I won't go through everything chapter and verse, but just to go back to the very kind of spark of inspiration for me, I suppose, I was at uni in Canberra doing law and Asian studies, and I watched a press club speech by a guy talking about this amazing thing called the internet, and I was like, oh my God, that sounds so cool. It was like mid-90s, I guess, and it was Bill Gates. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I can't tell you how influential that speech was or just watching it on my career, because I've basically worked in things, you know, that have related to digital transformation, copyright, the internet, online, everything my whole career, through, copyright originally, then politics, then television for quite a long time, free-to-air television, and now in music, and all of these industries going through digital transformation while I've been there. And I'm just fascinated by it. Mm.
And leading up to ARIA, again, I remember at the time, obviously Dan Rosen was the CEO before you stepped in, and his announcement that he was leaving was a shock in itself. And your announcement was equal shock, equal excitement, because everyone knew kind of what you did at the PPCA beforehand. Can you tell me a little bit about your involvement in that position? Was it very cliche and boring that there was a role that you applied for? Did someone call you before Dan even made the announcement?
No. So I started as CEO of both ARIA and PPCA at the same time. And I have never worked in the music industry before that announcement. And I'm pretty sure that on the day of the announcement, there was a very surprised, well, I know I was very surprised at the reaction from the music industry, how enormous it was. And there were probably a lot of quite surprised people in the music industry just going, who the hell is Annabelle Heard? A lot of Googling of my name, I would imagine. I knew Dan. We were friends. We worked together many years ago. And, you know, I had interactions with ARIA and PBCA actually through my TV career, you know, because we obviously in television use a lot of sound recordings and we were, you know, working licensing and we had similar issues on copyright and stuff. So, yeah, I saw the announcement that Dan was leaving. I had left 10 at that point. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was having one of those, I really need to detox from 16 years in commercial free-to-air television and then decide what to do moments, which was really fun, although it was through COVID, which is a bit limiting. So I just rang Dan up. I'm like, hey, how's that job? Is it, what do you reckon? And from there I applied and, yeah, I just thought it would be really cool to be able to go into an industry fresh with no baggage, basically, a lot of experience. And I felt like I had the right experience for the role. Commercial experience in the entertainment industry, digital transformation, copyright, all those things, but without any preconceived views or ideas about the music business or how it ran. And fortunately for me, the industry was so welcoming. I was a little nervous that people would be like, what on earth does she know about music? But it was really the opposite. It was really like, wow, you know, you've got experience that we think could be really helpful, but most importantly, you've got like fresh eyes on a whole bunch of issues. And two organisations that probably, you know, it's time after 10 years of Dan being in the role for, you know, a bit of a refresh, as is just natural when someone leaves. So, yeah, it was quite a big thing when I started and then sort of thrown into the thick of a few things straight away.
Yeah. I mean, obviously your work with Channel 10, correct me if I'm wrong, Chief Operating Officer, right?
Yes, Operating Officer, yeah.
Yeah, so obviously you have vast experience working in media. The music industry, like most industries, can be quite tribal. And, you know, if you're not one of us, who are you? But, you know, like I said, I remember working in the music media at the time and your announcement was really welcome with open arms. I think the Australian industry, I mean, given at the time we were also going through a global pandemic.
Totally.
It was kind of refreshing. It was kind of the industry is going through a transition. I think that change made sense. Would you agree?
Well, I mean, this is going to sound a little bit, I don't mean it to sound arrogant, but I did go into the very first interview and just said, I'm going to tell you why I'm the perfect person for your job. And it was those things, you know, it was the experience that I brought to the role, but it was also, again, looking at things in a slightly different way and being able to use all of the skills and experience I felt like I'd developed over my whole career to work in an industry that I haven't ever worked in, but I am a massive music lover, massive music fan. Even through the years of having small children, my husband and I used to go to gigs and stuff, always listening. So to be able to work in this industry and go behind, you know, backstage or whatever was so appealing. I thought I want to be able to apply all the skills I have to help where I can and make things better for, at the end of the day, for Australian artists and to get more Australian artists heard by Australian audiences. Mm.
I mean, you would know through your work at Channel 10 that Mumbrella loves its brands. When you came on board the ARIA train, were you ready for it in the sense that did you know that when we talk about brands, as far as music goes in Australia, there is no bigger brand than ARIA? Did you really understand that once you jumped on?
I had always really admired the ARIA brand, and I would say it is, as you know, within music but also outside of music. Mm. When I tell people what I do, I say I'm the head of ARIA and PBCA, you know, the ARIA Awards, and they're, oh, my God, yeah, oh, my God. So it is a really well-known, brilliant brand, and all kudos to Dan and the team for, you know, getting it to that level and keeping it at that level. So I knew it was a great organisation. I did not know how influential it was in the music industry. I felt like, okay, we represent the recorded music sector. PBCA is about recorded music. But it does have a much bigger kind of presence than that, I guess. And that was apparent to me quite quickly, but not before I took the job, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But I spent a lot of, as soon as I started, I pretty much spent the first 3 months just talking to everybody and anybody I could possibly talk to in the music industry. And I had the great privilege of being able to say, I don't know anything, tell me stuff and asking dumb questions. Like, where, how do people make money? You know, how does it all work? What does a manager do? What's in that, you know? So, and people were so generous with that information. And it was just, yeah, it was really important to me to get across things really quickly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's quite an influential organization, and that's really good.
Yeah. And I mean, I mentioned earlier that, you know, that particular time was a very transformative time. You know, take aside the global pandemic, the industry was going through changes. There was obviously a massive shakeup later that year with Sony Music Australia. We don't have to get into it, but I think everyone knows what I'm talking about. Was that a big shake for you as far as, you know, when you're getting to grips with the industry and meeting people that this is, it's not only a ginormous industry in Australia, but it really was in a transitional phase at that point in time?
There were two huge things that were happening when I started. The first was the absolute, catastrophic effect, I would say, of COVID. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that our artists couldn't tour even domestically for better part of 3 years,
sure,
was a disaster, especially because artists make most of their living from live. And then the other thing was people immediately started talking to me about issues around sexual harassment and inequality and things that were happening and, you know, industry issues, the Me Too moment stuff that we sort of had been through in television a little bit earlier because of you know, everything happening with Harvey Weinstein.
Of course.
So those were the two things that we had to confront straight away. I was able to bring my kind of government and lobbying experience from television and from working in government to help where I could with the COVID stuff. And then on the other side, very, very difficult, but again, just people were coming to me saying, we need to do something. I talked to APRA pretty quickly on. We held a meeting to say, oh, my God, what are we going to do? The hard thing was you can't have ARIA leading a movement like that, or APRA or any of the other music bodies. It had to be led as a group, which is incredibly difficult to do. It's like doing something by committee en masse in a very sensitive and difficult area. But look, through the work of some incredible people in this industry, we managed to basically raise a lot of money to get a really comprehensive report done on the state of the industry, which was the Raising Our Voices report. Which made a number of recommendations, has led to the creation of the Centre for Creative Workplaces at government level. So that's, you know, that was a huge thing that needed to happen, and then obviously working through COVID. And then, you know, things have evolved since then into other issues. Not that those two have gone away, they certainly haven't. Mm. But, you know, there are other big things now that the music industry is dealing with.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you mentioned there that, you know, you had experience in with the stuff with the Me Too movement with your experience in TV. You know, talking about someone who coming on board didn't have a lot of music industry experience, you know, in hindsight, that was invaluable because it really was. You know, there was always talk and rumblings throughout the years, but it really did come to a head, I feel, in 2021. And I guess your input there, your leadership in an area like that really would be invaluable, would it not?
Well, I, you know, I had experience from TV. I also had been on the board of Save the Children Australia. I had been on the board of the Australian Film, Television, Radio School, both organisations which were excellent, you know, standard in terms of dealing with issues like this. So there was all of that background as well. And I think it was just a timing thing. I just happened to be a voice that at that moment could, with others, certainly I'm not taking credit for this at all, because no one person can do anything by themselves, just to sort of start things and try and get something moving that's going to become more of a movement. And thank you to the incredible people who came to that first meeting, and then all the people who were involved in the survey and the work and have been involved since. I do feel like we are making really positive steps towards change. But like everywhere, there is a long way to go.
Yeah. I mean, it feels surreal to think that all happened 3 years ago. And I know this is an odd question because we're not in the middle of a pandemic right now, but how has, I guess, the way the industry operated from your perspective, say you're an outside voice coming in and seeing how things operate compared to now, has there been a lot of change? Has it kind of been just a slight tweaking of the system. Again, I know that's an odd question given that artists couldn't perform at the time that you came in, but I just mean how everything was running within.
I think the thing that COVID did that was positive, let's look for silver linings, was to really bring the industry together in a way it hadn't perhaps been before. So as you would know really well, music industry, whatever that is, however you define it, is super fragmented. There are thousands of little tiny businesses. Then you've got, so you've got live, recorded. Within that, you've got big and small businesses, but even the big businesses aren't that big. So, and then you've got the promoters and the venues and the major, massive venues and the small venues. It's really a fragmented industry with very little research actually on the size of it, how many people work within it. In fact, which is one of the problems I think I first identified, like compared to television and the screen industry, we had none of that data to be able to take to government during COVID to say, we are a really important industry. You need to help us get through this really, really impactful pandemic. So, you know, I think COVID brought us together because we had to be together. You had promoters and labels and managers and artists and everyone coming together. And out of that has come Music Australia, which is a whole new government body just about growing music. You've got Sound New South Wales here. You've got initiatives that have never happened before, and that was because of industry unity. So that's definitely changed. I definitely feel like there have been some really positive cultural changes. And I would, and I'm not suggesting in any remote universe that things are fixed. They definitely are not. And this is not just about women. This is also about other underrepresented people in the industry. We need more diversity in leadership. and a very, you know, just one thing off the top of my head. But that change has been really positive. I think the other change that we're seeing, which is not so positive, is that our challenge of getting Australians to listen to Australian music is growing. You know, we are a music-loving country and, you know, we're releasing some figures that show that revenue in recorded music has hit another massive high, which means that people are listening to more music and buying more music, and it's really valuable. But the challenge for us is getting a bigger share of that pie for our local artists. And for a bunch of reasons, that is shrinking at the moment, which is very alarming.
Yeah. I'll come back to the charts in a little bit, but you know, that's a great segue. The radio royalties and the fair pay for play on radio bill, I think it was in the Senate 2 weeks ago this week as we record this. This has been covered pretty extensively on Mumbrella. Myself, obviously being in the music media, knows it very well. But for maybe those, for the uninitiated, maybe give them an idea of what this is and what ARIA and PPCA are trying to achieve here.
Sure. Well, this is a very, very simple request, I guess, to be able to simply negotiate a fair market rate for the use of sound recordings on radio. Unlike any other type of copyright, in fact, there are virtually no products at all where the government imposes either a price cap, in the case of the ABC, of half a cent per head of population, or a cap, sorry, not a price cap, a fixed price, or a price cap, in the case of radio, of maximum 1% of revenue on a product that those participants use to run their own businesses, to monetize, to sell advertising, whatever. And all we're asking for is the ability to negotiate a rate that isn't capped or set. it's very simple. And the reason this is so important is that at the moment, Australian artists and, you know, other artists, not just Australians, but particularly Australian artists, are missing out on potential royalties for the work that they have invested both money and time and creativity and promotion and market, everything that goes into making a successful record. They're missing out on being fairly remunerated for that because of these caps. And for me, it's just the most indefensible situation to be told as an industry that your work is not valued at more than this amount. But it's just so hard to get rid of these caps, but we are having a really red hot go at the moment. We think getting rid of them will make a change, a big difference for Australian artists in a market where they're most likely to be played on radio. That's the thing. Will not have a, you know, hugely detrimental impact on radio, and just put us on a level playing field with every other copyright owner and really everybody else who's selling a product.
Yeah. It's interesting because a lot of the statements and comments you've issued on this subject have been quite fair, and you've made it a point to say, like, we're not trying to fight with anyone. We're not trying to make this a battle. But unfortunately, it does feel that way, doesn't it? It kind of feels like radio against everyone else. What are we trying to advocate here as far as, you know, not going to war with somebody? This is meant to be, to your point, this is meant to be about the good and what's fair to the Australian artists.
The last thing that we want to do is go to war with anyone. And music and radio are absolutely natural partners. And Triple J, you know, the ABC has their price fixed. Natural partner with Australian music. But at the moment it's not an equal partnership. Our artists feel like they're being taken advantage of, and that's not fair. We want to be able to work. All we want is to be able to get in a room and negotiate. And once we get in that room, we will talk to radio, we'll put our rate on the table, they'll say they don't agree, whatever. Hopefully we'll get to an agreed position, but if we don't, we've got this thing called the Copyright Tribunal, which is basically the independent umpire. We both go to the Copyright Tribunal, they'll decide what they think is a fair rate, as they have done many times for many other industries that have not taken a huge financial hit. They've never imposed a fee on any industry that has, you know, put them out of business or even anything like that. They would never do that. And so for me, it feels like a very simple request of fairness, of equality, of respect. But, you know, I understand why radio is pushing very hard against it. Of course, they don't want to pay anymore for the music that runs their business, basically.
Yeah. I mean, this quote from Mushroom Group COO Chris Maund, I think, really sums it up well. And I'm reading off this because I don't want to get the quote wrong. He said, right now, the Australian recording industry is a two-speed economy. For the big artists with catalogs, times are better than ever, but for the emerging artists, it's never been harder to break through. That's a really good point because, you know, you can compare it to any era if we, you know, were trying to relate it to the big acts of 2024. The G Flips, the Amy Sharks, the Tash Sultanas, they're all doing okay. But it is the younger artist that suffers. How are they to break through without that support from something as simple as their local radio station?
Well, that's absolutely right. But in fact, I would say the G Flips and the Tashes, you know, yes, they've got great audiences at the moment and they are incredible artists, but I wouldn't assume that they're rolling in money. It is really challenging for all of those artists at the moment. Of course, what Chris is talking about is this sort of catalog versus new artists, and that's what you're talking about as well. Catalog music generally, globally, is going incredibly well. Breaking through for any new artist is hard, and even more so in Australia. And keeping a sustainable career as one of those, even the artists you mentioned, keeping up a sustainable career is really challenging at the moment. So every cent counts, and particularly where it's money that, you know, we feel like we could negotiate a rate that more accurately reflects the value that these sound recordings are providing to radio. Radio is profitable, which is great. Regional radio is doing well. We just feel like we are currently being taken advantage of in that mix.
And I don't mean to put you on the spot, so feel free to give me the generic comment, but is there an ideal percentage or rate for you that you would want to see Australian artists with on radio?
Do you mean the rate that they would pay? Yeah. Look, I think I'm not going to speculate about what rate I think is fair. I mean, at the end of the day, I'll have my view. Radio will have their view, and without agreement, neither of those views matter. You know, it's what matters is what we can agree on. And, you know, there was a cap like this in Italy that was removed in the last 10 years. It was 2%. The cap went. Radio and the equivalent of PBCA negotiated a new rate with a phase-in period. Everybody's fine. Everyone's, you know, doing well over there. That's all we want to be able to do. And as I said, if we can't agree the rate, we'll take our chances in the Copyright Tribunal and they'll decide what they think is fair.
So can you give an update on where we're at with that? Following the Senate hearing, what would the next steps be?
Well, the Senate hearings were about a bill, a private senator's bill introduced by Senator David Pocock. Look, you know, we would hope that there would be support for that bill to pass. And the committee that was looking at the bill will issue a report, I think, sometime around the middle of the year. It is unusual for the government to support private senators' bills generally. But I think really importantly, what this bill, and we think it should be supported, by the way, because it's very simple. What this bill does is really shine a light on this issue. The fact that we had every sector of the music industry in Canberra that Friday a couple of weeks ago talking about this issue so passionately, artists, managers, all the industry organisations, it is a really important issue for us. It is the single thing, one of our managers said, it's the single thing government could do at the stroke of a pen almost to improve the financial stability of Australian artists.
Okay. Well, we're very excited to see potential updates there. Just going back to the ARIA charts for a minute, it's really good to hear that you're saying that, you know, more Australian artists are entering the charts, because I remember doing a report myself a few years ago. I think it was right after Post Malone's second album came out. And his first two albums dominated, I think, almost all of the top 40. Obviously, we've seen that with Taylor Swift. I think that might be a little bit of an anomaly because of Taylor Swift being as big as she is.
It's Taylor.
It's kind of impossible. It is Taylor. But do you think it's on the rise as far as Australian acts entering the charts? Is that on the rise?
I would like to say yes, but the data is showing that is not the case at the moment. So last year, I think we had four Australian albums in the top 100 for the year and three singles, and none of those were new last year. Mm. It is just really tough for a bunch of reasons for Australian artists to get into the charts at the moment. The charts are just data, by the way. They are just simply reflecting consumption. We don't manipulate them in any way. And whilst we don't like what they're spitting out so much at the moment, they are important in telling us what's actually happening so that we can say, okay, I think we've got a bit of a problem here, everyone. We need to do some big picture thinking about how we're going to get Australian artists back into the charts. More importantly, what drives getting them into the charts, getting more Australians listening to Australian music. Mm-hmm. So I do think there is a real challenge here at the moment. Everyone is acknowledging that. And there are a number of complex reasons for that, and there is no simple solution. So it's not an easy challenge, but, you know, if we don't do something quite big picture or drastic right now, I think we're only going to be heading in one direction, and that's not a good one.
Yeah, it is tricky because I suppose if a call to arms or a message to music fans would just simply be listen to more Australian music.
Yeah.
But there's always an argument, you know, and that's been going on for decades, that the artists who get played on, you know, Today FMs and Triple M's get more airtime than, say, the artists who get played on Triple J. Or, you know, there's a long argument about the heavy metal sector kind of being left off because they're not really mainstream friendly. Do you think that's an area that maybe we do look at as far as, you know, a band like Parkway Drive, for example, who are, for those who don't know, they're arguably Australia's biggest heavy metal band. They are enormous overseas. They headline festivals everywhere. Again, that's not to say everyone listen to heavy metal now, but just as far as engaging with the bands and artists that are coming out of here, it's so important.
You're right. You're so right. It is so important. And, you know, they are a great example, but we have a bunch of other Australian artists that are, you could almost say, doing better overseas than they are at home. Oh. Like, they're streaming massive numbers internationally, and they're not so well known at home. It is a bit of a thing that, you know, as Aussies, we like success. We like our artists to be successful overseas, and then we sort of go, oh, who are, you know. That's, export is so important for all of those reasons. But I think that we can't just look at one thing here. Like, there isn't one thing that's going to address this. It's really about, and you sort of said it's a call to arms, it is about growing that audience again, and that's going to take different components across the music ecosystem, live festivals, streaming, radio, you know, even just big discovery platforms like TikTok at the moment. How do we bring all of those things together to start growing our audience again, to getting more Australian music content to Australian audiences?
Is there a particular area that you would like to see improvement in as far as music fans' involvement in? Is it, you know, going to more music festivals? Is it going to more local gigs? Is it simply streaming more local music? Is there a particular area that you think this would be a big help as far as when you think big picture?
It's all of those things. And there are challenges that are different challenges in each of those areas. So as we know, festivals are having real problems at the moment with, you know, weather and cost of living pressures and all of those things. Venues, particularly small venues, are struggling and have been struggling mainly massively from a COVID hit, but again, cost of living. We want to get more audiences back out to live music. So ARIA runs Great Southern Nights, which is a live music program we run with Destination New South Wales. And we provide funding to artists and venues to get gigs happening. And the whole reason we do that is to both get our artists working and get crew and everybody that supports them working, getting venues pumping so that they can, you know, stay sustainable, and also getting artists and performers out to regional areas. That's another big thing, because that's all about audience development. And maybe you go and see a band that you might not have heard of, or you may have, maybe you've heard on the radio or whatever. Then you go and stream their music more, and then you go and see them at a festival. It's all a big ecosystem. But to get more people streaming, you know, they talk about the sort of lean back and lean forward in streaming, and the lean back is all the editorial side, so the playlists that you might, you know, Hot Hits Australia or whatever. But the majority of listening is now lean forward. So, you know, how do you get people to actively search for a piece of music or a recording? Number of reasons why things spike in that area, you know, whether it's a viral thing on TikTok or whether it's like the Kate Bush example from Stranger Things. I mean, and a number of Australian songs have got into the charts recently because they've had viral TikTok moments. But, you know, for me, again, it's just how do you bring all of those threads together? You have to address each one of them to make this a success again. And we've done this before. We can do it. So in the 70s, there was a massive problem with Australian television and film content. None of it was being made. So at the time, people said, we've got to do something big. They introduced content quotas. They created the Australian Film, Television and Radio School to, you know, get elite, highly skilled people into the industry out in the world. But it's that kind of thinking that I think we need to be doing right now.
Yeah. I mean, a couple of months ago, there was a big passing of the torch moment when Richard Kingsmill left Triple J. Obviously, he's instrumental and so influential to that station and the ABC network. Again, we think about trying to inspire the next generation of Australian music listeners. Is there anything that you would not like to say, but like, is there something that you would love ABC to adopt? When we think about a stalwart like Richard Kingsmill moving on, is there something or someone they should be looking at as far as we want Triple J to stay as one of those big brand Australian music brands for young music listeners?
For sure. First of all, I can't not say it. I'd love them to actually pay for the sound recordings that they use on radio. That would be the first one. Triple J is incredibly important, particularly for independent artists in Australia, and they have been amazing. They've created so many careers. They are struggling, I think, with falling audiences at the moment, and, you know, new management over there. I'm interested to see how they adjust. I mean, I think the ABC has a really important role, given it's a public broadcaster, in supporting local content, and that includes not just screen content but music content. And I think you can look at what the BBC does in the UK. That, you know, we've got Triple J, but I think, you know, BBC Radio is supporting kind of pop, you know, massive mainstream pop acts. Their television is supporting their music industry as well. We don't really have any music television shows at the moment. Mm. There have been a couple. I think, you know, the ABC's got Take Five, which is great. I think they definitely have a role in supporting Australian music, and I would love to talk to them more about, you know, building that role up a bit more.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's as I said, I keep coming back. One music TV show is not going to fix our problem either. It's just got to be that build the wall from the ground up approach.
Yeah. Well, I need you to put your CEO/COO hat on now, because is there a particular, speaking from the brand that is ARIA, is there a message you'd like to give to the media and market industry when we talk about supporting Australian artists, when we talk about more radio play, when we talk about just getting Australian artists on the map? Is there something you'd like to share with the people listening to this episode right now?
Look, we have got incredible talent in this country, and we've got incredible music, music that's already available, music that's going to be recorded. When you bring incredible music together with incredible screened or television content or whatever type of content you're making, that's when the magic happens. You know, there aren't many things that can communicate or make people feel the way that music does. scientifically proven to be able to give you goosebumps, which, you know, brands are very interested in. I mean, my message would just be, if you have the option of using an Australian artist or an Australian recording, please look into that option. It's one of the reasons why we introduced two new ARIAs last year, actually, two new ARIA awards for best use of Australian recordings in an ad, because we want people to at least take a moment to think, could I use an Australian recording in that ad? Create a little bit of an incentive, you know, if I do, maybe I'll be eligible, maybe I'll win an ARIA, which is pretty cool, rock and roll. But also just to reward those people that do. And, you know, there are some incredible campaigns that use Australian music. Telstra and Flight Facilities is one. Last year's winners were Baker Boy and John Williamson for two different amazing campaigns, one with Google and one with the Australian Marine Conservation Foundation. So I would just say, please put Australian music on your agenda. I mean, in the TV world, we used to talk a lot about the importance of Australian content. And it is super important that as a whole media, we continue to get Australian stories to Australian audiences. But let's think about it holistically.
Yeah. Any particular Australian artists that you want to shout out? Because if we ask my mother, it's only John Farnham. I appreciate that, Mum, but we're trying to think a little lower.
John Farnham, when his music is played on radio, is currently missing out on a lot of the royalties because his songwriters, who are getting most of the money, are from overseas. Anyway, I can't choose my favourite children. That's like, no, I can't do that. I cannot do that. I mean, look, if you look at last year's ARIA winners, Troy Sivan was a massive winner last year. I love that album. He's such a sort of global sort of superstar. You could really listen to that album and hear why it was going to be so successful overseas. Obviously, Kylie also won last year, having an incredible moment in her career, deserved.
She's playing Splendor this year.
Playing Splendor, cracked the US, you know. But there's just so many. I mean, Dom Dolla, another artist that's doing big things. I mean, in terms of, we have incredible Indigenous artists, so Bujra, who did have a pretty, you know, radio really supported his song Therapy last year, which is a great song. He's incredible talent, super young. Yeah. I don't know. I could go on. There are so many.
Look, Panao about to release an album. I think Off That Empire of the Sun are about to release a new album. So new and older artists, there's a lot coming out of Australia. It's a very exciting time.
We do really well in dance music. I mean, I'm a little bit of a dance music fan, a bit of a raver from the old days. but, yeah, I mean, Dom Dolla said at the ARIAs that people are always asking him what's in the water in Australia. And, yeah, we do incredibly well in electronic music overseas.
Well, Annabelle, thank you so much for taking the time today. I really appreciate it. Is there anything else we need to know about with ARIA in 2024? I know it's only March. And the ARIAs, I think, are going to be in November. Is there anything between now and then that we should know about?
Oh, look, we're going to be doing a lot of work. We're doing some great work at the moment with hip-hop and R&B genres. So we did a lot of work last year elevating that genre, advocacy, education with hip-hop community, such a great community. The ARIAs this year are going to be spectacular, so you'll have to wait and see.
Well, I hope to be there because I was in New York last year, but I will be there this time.
I would love that. It's going to be amazing. It was a whole reset last year, actually, the show and everything last year. We did it differently. We had Craig Campbell from Roving and Second Sunday doing it for us, and, oh, my God, it was amazing.
I'm going to consider that an official invite from the CEO, so I have this recording as proof.
You're very welcome.
Thank you so, so much for coming on the show, and we'll talk very soon.
Pleasure. Thank you so much.
That's our episode. A big thank you to Annabelle and everyone at ARIA for putting this episode together. And of course, thank you for listening to this week's episode. As always, to stay in the loop about everything happening within Australia's media and marketing industry, be sure to check out mumbrella.com.au. We'll talk again next week.
Podcast edit by Abes Audio.